You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practices Show. I'm your host, Kirk Barron, and this is one of my favorite segments of all time, is learning the stories of the superheroes in dentistry. And today we have a good friend of mine, Dr. Scott McLean, on, and you will absolutely love this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to love this. I'm going to ask him some tough questions, but we're going to hear about his story and how he got here. And I know you'll love it. If you're joining us for the first time, I want to do two things. Number one, I just want to welcome you to a great community of people that just like to learn. I love this because I get to learn from my friends and we get to share great ideas. So I'm going to encourage you to just keep showing up every single week. The second thing I'm going to encourage you to do is subscribe. So wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it be Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, wherever, just hit the subscribe button, because you'll see every single week we're going to bring you another superhero in dentistry, just so that you guys can learn and create a better practice and a better life. Also, we take great show notes. So everything Scott and I talk about today, just go back to the actual episode, wherever you consume podcasts at, you're going to see all the links to his practice. I'm going to ask you to check out his YouTube page, which is freaking phenomenal. He's also an expert at Instagram and other things that we'll mention. I'll put the links right in there so you can just click on them and go straight to them. So Scott, thanks for being on, buddy. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to see you again, Kirk, and I'm just here winding down in my day. I've worked probably an eight-hour day, probably about 10 hours in the 8 hours, but it's I enjoy it, and you'll see people buzzing behind me a little bit, but they shouldn't interrupt us, so I look forward to talking with you and catching up and seeing how you're doing.
Absolutely. And you
and actually, I want to say one thing before we start, is that I've subscribe to the podcast, and I listen to it a lot in the car, which is fabulous because I just have it on Bluetooth. It comes into my car and I'm listening to you interviewing different people about different things in their life or sleep apnea or this, and it's been fabulous. So well done.
Well, thanks. I love this stuff so much. I'm a CE junkie like you. So what a great thing. my wife thinks I have an illness because I love just learning, but this is so much fun for me, and I'm so pumped you're here. Now, I want to tell everybody, you and I have known each other. I mean, I've known of you. I've seen you speak before, but we didn't really even get to know each other except in the last year with the conference. You jumped on with the COVID conference, and you were such an instrumental part of that. And you're in Halifax, Nova Scotia. So tell everybody, if they don't know who Scott McLean is, tell us who you are. And then I'm going to go right back to how the heck you became a dentist, but give us a little current state of affairs. Who are you?
Well, I would say that I'm a passionate dentist for sure. I love to share. I love to learn. It's not often I go and teach, and I've taught all over the United States and Canada, and I've been in Australia, and I've been in Europe, in England, Ireland. And so I've been lecturing in a number of different locations, Spain. So it's about the passion more than anything. And I've been quite involved with that. And one of the things I really like a lot is to go somewhere and learn something from some of the local experts there. And often I'll have a case I'm presenting that I may be doing in the next month. And I'm, you know, listening to a study club go through the case, and I know what I want to do, but that may change what I want to do at the end of the time when I'm doing the study club. So you learn from different people, and hopefully you realize as a dentist that you don't know everything and that you need other people and you need to kind of interact and to understand cases. Yes, cases will be kind of in a certain pattern that you start to see, but we do a lot of different cases, from implants to all in four to crowns, full mouth crowns, to digital smile designs, to basic fillings, and even every once in a while an amalgam, but not that many now, but still once in a while.
Yeah.
So it's been one of those things that this summer was fabulous, because it was like I was going to work when I was at the ACT Dental conferences. And so I was on the front line right there with my face up with yours. And I learned a lot of stuff there, a lot of good little tips that I still go back and check them out. And some were really my favorite times last year that I went through and listened to things. So it was good.
Yeah. Now, if you're listening, you're going to see Scott's a pretty modest guy. Like, he's not only one of the top speakers in the world, he probably has logged the most miles, has the most diverse subject. He actually showed a video of him getting his own tooth extracted on an iPhone. So if you ever go to his stuff where you see it on YouTube, you'll just see some incredible stuff. Over 12 million views on YouTube?
No, not quite 12 million, but there's close to 4 million now. Views. And yeah, and I have quite a few subscribers, but my main thing that I used to do, and I still do now, is to try to take questions that people have and then go to YouTube and answer them in video form. And that's been very powerful, because it makes me learn along the way, because I realize that my job is to learn and learn. And that's why we call it practice. It's not, we're not doing it really. We're practicing all the time. And some of the things I've done this year, I've been most proud of. And it's like, as I learn and start to fit things together, you realize that you start to become very complex at what you can do. And so that's kind of where, you want to always kind of be humble, I think. I think that my parents have always taught me that. You want to be humble and be kind of very genuine as a dentist. And I would say that to new dentists coming out, that you need to kind of really try to understand what the other person is thinking. Right. And when I'm listening to people, I try to do that, but it's sometimes hard, because I'm a type A personality type of person. And you you want to think that, okay, there's a problem, here's my answer. And right away I'm trying to make the answer. And sometimes you should slow down and then say, okay, what are some of the answers that could possibly help you here?
Yeah.
But that's kind of what I'm about, is about sharing too. You know, it's not just money the reason why I do things, but you do have to compensate for missing your practice time.
Absolutely. So, and I've never been good at answers, more questions. So I got a ton for you.
Yeah.
Here's one of my questions for you. Why and when did you decide to be a dentist? When did that happen? Did you always know you want to be a dentist? Like, how did that happen?
No, my whole entry into dentistry was a lot to do with my next door neighbor, who was a dentist. And I realized very early that I'm pretty good with my hands. I'm left-handed, but I'm pretty much ambidextrous, So I really liked working with my hands when I was a young boy. And, probably a lot of people in dentistry are like that, but I'd disappear down in the basement and I'd find pieces of wood or make a birdhouse or make a this or make, and I'd come up and I'd give it to my mom. She'd go, "How did you do that?" But I was able to fix things young and able to have a mechanical mind. So when I got into dentistry, it was me looking at two different careers. To be honest, I looked at being a doctor, a medical doctor, and also a dentist. And I got to dentistry, and I remember still I had spent maybe $2,500 on instruments. And I thought to myself, what am I doing? Like, why did I spend all this money? And I sat there on the very first day thinking I made a big mistake. And
why?
After that day, was never a big mistake after that day. Well, I was just doubting what I had done because I, all of a sudden I was sitting there and my partner next to me is actually my business partner here now. We worked together because we were McLean and McSween. And so I spoke to him and I was looking at all these things that I bought, like articulators and, you know, it was a lot cheaper then and, you know, different waxing instruments. And I was just questioning the whole thing. And after that day, I didn't question one other time.
Okay.
I've never said anything else, but I love this.
All right. Go back to your neighbor though. Like, what was it? Did your neighbor come over and say something to you? Like, what was it that your neighbor said to you that you saw that you're like, oh my gosh, this is the career. Was there anything specific?
I think that it was also my own dentist. When I used to go to the dentist, I had a few fillings when I was younger. I had a little bit of a sweet tooth. And when I went to the dentist, I would say, can I have a mirror? And I'd watch everything that the guy was doing, had braces, had all those different things. And I think that made me very comfortable with the idea of what a dentist really does. And when I got into dentistry, I also got into medical school at the same time. And I decided on dentistry for me. And I've never looked back, but I think it was about the hand skills, having timelines that you can go home and not worry about losing your patient. Hopefully, you know, you don't want to have a patient that's dying or so. The lifestyle looked good to me because I saw that as well. And so I think that for the most part, it was this hand-eye dexterity thing and math. I love math and I love working things out, carving stuff. I used to carve Christmas ornaments when I was a little kid. So when I was doing my chalk carving, it was just like simple for me.
Yeah.
Because of that tacit knowledge that you have.
Yeah. So VR, dental school, what was dental school? You know, because everybody's all over the board. Some people hated it. Some people didn't love it. Was it easy for you? Did you like it? What? Yeah,
I loved it. I thought that the experience I had at Dalhousie University was excellent. And they prepared me very well for, you know, seeing my patients. And I thought it was just a fabulous experience. And I still remember the very first day when one of my mentors said, and it was Dr. David Precious, I may even have mentioned it the last time I was talking to you, but he showed a picture of a young guy, a really good looking guy. And he said, I want to show you something. And he said, and I want you to learn something. He said, do not worry about getting good marks. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, everything was about getting good marks to get here. He said, I want you to think about getting knowledge. So when you're sitting opposite your patient, you have the ability to diagnose, to treat, and to understand the problem you're seeing and to be aware of it, because being aware of it is really important, because when we graduate, we're not really aware of a lot of the things you start to see as you get it more advanced. So, and what he showed was a case of a young guy who he showed the x-ray. We all look at the x-ray. And then he showed the guy 6 months later and half of his face had been carved away because of cancer. And on the x-ray was a lesion that he showed us. He said, you're not aware of this lesion because you're not trained. But the dentist who saw this should have been aware, and that person wouldn't have lost their face the way that they did. This was a 27-year-old male. And I was like, okay, I get that. That was really powerful what he did. And he walked out of the room after he said it.
Wow.
I was like, wow, that's just so powerful. And so he's no longer with us now, but he's influenced a lot of different people. And but along the way, we had really good friends in dental school, but also we were a little bit cliquey in our class. So it was one of those classes where there's different groups. Yeah. But it was fun. And, you know, I wanted to be involved and got involved with being president of the class and society president and valedictorian and did all those things that were voted upon by your other classmates, which I found even more, you know, I would like to think that if I had something that could help them along the way, my goal was not to be hoarding something. My goal was to be like golf. When you're playing golf, you want everyone to have a good game, because when everyone's playing, you want everyone to have a good game so you'll have more fun, because the word competition, really, it means to learn together. And when you have a competition, you learn together. So if you have a competition where one team really beats the other team really hard, really big, then there's not a competition. You didn't get better yourself. Right. You're already that level and you don't really raise to the next level. But when you have competition, you actually both get better.
Yeah. So take us through. So once you finished dental school, like, did you start your family after that? Where did you start a family in dental school? Where'd you go after that?
Yeah, no, I started my family after a nice bottle of wine and room for no, but my wife actually, I got married after second year. And so I came to my wife and I said, she said, when do you think we'll get married? And because we were going out for 7 years at that point. And I said, well, probably after a couple of years after I get out of dental school. Meanwhile, I had the ring already purchased and gave it to her in Nantucket and did everything right. Like, I was on the beach and it was really kind of mushy mush, you know, like with music from my Sony Walkman at the time. Mm-hmm. But when I got out of dental school, when I was leaving dental school, she was actually pregnant. And so we had our son and we moved into this really small house, a real fixer upper. And I didn't have any money at all, nothing. I purchased a ring on a big loan. And but when I left, you know, I did know one thing. This is my life partner that was going to be someone that I wanted to have here in my life the whole time. And so that we've been together a long time now. And you know, she's been very supportive and we've done a lot of travel, a lot of fun stuff. And the kids have been wonderful because of how she's raised them. And she was a stay home mom, not to say that that's the best way of doing things, but for us, she gave up a lot to just be home with the kids. And so it's been a fun ride that way. But the, you know, I've certainly been involved with my dental associations and early and getting involved with, different groups, trying to give back and trying to be participating and learning, you know, what's going on in the world.
Yeah. So. Now, you and I were talking about this before we went live. You know, some of the best moments of our lives were like when we didn't have any. I remember living with Sarah in the studio bedroom apartment and she had a job. I didn't. And she'd come home with a paycheck and I'd say, can we have beer? Pizza? Yeah. And I go, can I have a beer too? And she goes, yeah, I think we could have a beer. And I was like, yes. Talk about the realness of the situation. Having a baby, finishing dental school. Like, the truth is, there's some people listening going, you don't understand. Like, I have no, but like, you had no money and you had a baby.
Yeah. And we did, you know, we had, you know, young baby, and those were probably some of the most fun times, even though we have a lot of fun still, we laugh. But the, you know, having kids, and I can remember when she came in, and actually the most shocking thing was, she came in with my son, who was, I think, almost two at the time. And she said, I still remember where she was. She came to the front of the office and she said, oh, I want to tell you something. I said, what? She goes, I'm pregnant. And I looked at her. I said, who's the father? Because I don't think it's me. Because I think we saw each other, you know, like maybe 10 minutes that month. And anyway, she laughed. And we knew, you know, that what to come was going to be great. And we had three children. But it was so funny at the time because, you know, meanwhile, I was trying to like reconstruct our house for us, ripping up carpets and painting and doing all this stuff to save money when probably I should have been making more money at the practice and trying to pay someone else to do it because you're an expensive painter if you're a dentist. Right. And you're probably not that good either. You know, you're probably, you know, better at, taking a crown preparation than doing something like that. But it was still really fun. And if you saw my first house, it was not a showstopper, that's for sure. But we made money on the house and then got another house, made more. Yeah. And so you gradually kind of do things and build things because I really had to start from nothing because we just didn't have anything after I got out of school. I had a lot of debt. That's more what I had.
Yeah. Did you ever buy the old house, the first house? Is it still around?
And do you it's still there.
Do you ever look at it and go, it's just smaller than I remembered it during time?
Yeah.
And then the kids are not impressed. You know,
and it's interesting because I had built a gazebo on the back of the house and it's still there, still on the side of the house and it still looks good. And I was always a builder, even at home. I was probably risking my fingers a little bit too much. And but we drove by that and it is very small, you know. But it was still a lot of fun experiences. It's not about the size of your house. It's more about, you know, the love in your house than anything. And so, because that's not what you're going to remember when you get older and you look back and you're talking to your significant people in your life, because we do have a core of significant people that have a big influence on us. And you start to find that out when you have a problem. And so when you have a problem, you need to have mentors in your personal life, in your private life, and all kinds of different areas, so that you have the ability to kind of meet the, as my father used to say, and he's still around healthy now at 85, he said, you're going to have speed bumps in your life. And when those speed bumps come, you need to be kind of prepared for those and realize that those speed bumps are going to hit you, and then you're going to be winded, and you're going to, you know, find out, he said, but you never make it so that you're wishing your life away. So when you're in the middle of exams, don't wish the next 3 days away that you have to study. Right. Like, really value that time that you have to study and kind of make yourself better. And he said, so it was a really good advice. And I still remember the other thing my father said as I was growing up is, you can be anything you want to be. He said, you know, there's nothing stopping you. You can be anything that you want to be. And that used to always just play in the back of my head. So I said that to my own kids, and they've been, you know, very happy children and doing well in life. So I think that's a really important message that people need to tell their children. Because I think I told you before, one time we were talking, is that one of my mentors, Dr. Dexter, who I bought the practice from, he and his brother were twin brothers. And he said, you know what your purpose in life is? And I said, no. And I was thinking money at the time, or, you know, I was thinking I need more money, or that was one of my purposes, to provide for my family. But he said, no, the main reason you're here is to replace yourself with someone better than yourself.
I love that. And
it really hit home with me, because replacing myself with, you know, another dentist, so having associates that come in that we can train the associate to the highest level possible, or having, more important, your children, and having them replace you and making them so that they're happy people, and that they understand that they need to do that for their own children when they have children, you know, if they're blessed that way. But I thought that was really profound by Dr. Dexter. And I still remember these conversations, you have them, and I remember exactly where I was and where he was when he said it.
That's
and
awesome.
I remember he was having a cigarette, because he used to put his gloves on and then smoke a cigarette. And that's how he kept his hands from getting smelly. And then he'd go in and see a patient and he wouldn't put gloves on. I was like, okay, that's not like what we were taught in dental school. But Dr. Dexter, you know, they were amazing people. And I still see a lot of their fillings that are still functional after many, many years that they've been gone. So it's amazing that they taught me a lot of things too.
That's awesome. So, okay. So how old are your kids now?
I have a 29, a 27, and a 23-year-old.
29.
And I hope I don't get in trouble because I said them wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
We're not going to hold you to it, so it's okay. Now, okay. So then you're pregnant with the second baby. Like, where did you go after? Did you go on to like a residency? Did you go right into private practice? Like, what'd you do?
I started it actually with my neighbor, who was the dentist.
Okay.
And I went in practice with him, and it's funny.
And where was
he? That was in Halifax.
In Halifax.
And I worked with them for 2 years, and interesting enough, he didn't really enjoy being a dentist. And so I couldn't understand that. I remember one day he said to me in private, he said, I'd rather drive a garbage truck than to be a dentist. And I was like, what's wrong? But it maybe was he was the wrong person to be in dentistry. But I remember that shocked me, because I was having a lot of fun and I couldn't wait to see my patients. And, you know, the first day that I went in, I said, well, I just can't wait to see the patient, because it's like, I'm going to get to see a patient. I still remember my second day, I did a filling on a young boy, and it was on a deciduous tooth. And so I got the filling in, and the other dentist that day was helping me. She said, well, how old is the boy? I said, well, I think he's 9. She goes, well, when's that tooth going to fall out? And so the tooth was going to come out when he was 9, but I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I just put this filling in because I saw a cavity. But what was happening is the tooth was growing up underneath, and it broke the filling out. And of course, I should have just taken the tooth out, but I didn't know at the time. I didn't know what I was looking at. It's okay. So new.
Yeah, it's all about progress, right?
Yeah, and then I learned and I said, okay, I did it with the best of intentions. I didn't do it to try to do a filling before I took the tooth out or anything like that. But it was interesting.
So you were there for how long? And then did you buy
them? I went 2 years with that practice. Then I went back with the Dexters and stayed with them until I bought into their practice. And they had probably one of the most successful practices in Nova Scotia with a lot of entrepreneurs, government people, politicians, people on TV. So they had a very substantial practice that, you'd say you need a crown and they go, okay, when can you get me in? And it's the kind of practice that you want to have because they always taught us to treat the patient to the best that you can, not assume that, that they want something cheaper. I thought that was a really good message until one day I had a guy, he was not young, I guess he was older than I was, and he's a janitor. And he came in with the green, green outfit with his name across here, just like I have now on my shirt here. I've got my name across, and he had the work boots on. He's sitting in my chair and he said, "Hey, doc," he goes, "I want to get my teeth fixed." And I said, "Okay, we can fix them. I can make you a real nice partial that will snap in over your teeth. And, it's not that expensive and I can make that for you." And he goes, "Well, isn't there anything better?" I said, "Well, I can make you a metal partial and the metal partial will fit and snap on your teeth. The plastic one is not as good as the metal. We call that a flipper, but the metal one costs a little bit more, but it snaps on your teeth." And he goes, "Well, okay." So he got the metal partial. And so I came in, gave it to him. He put it in. He goes, "Isn't there anything better than this?" I said, "Well, you know what? There's implants. Why didn't you tell me about that?" And I learned a very valuable lesson that day because I did not tell him about the implants. And I said, "You know what? The money that you spent on your partial, I'm going to take it off. If you want to do implants, I'll take that off." And he did 7 implants. Wow. I assumed that because he was a janitor that he couldn't afford it. But he said to me, "Who are you to tell me that I can't afford it? Because I've been saving and I don't spend a lot and I want to spend it on my quality of life." And I learned a huge lesson at that appointment.
That's a powerful lesson. That's pretty early in your career you learned that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't believe it. And the same thing happened to me and another guy who, during his career, he built some of the biggest buildings in Nova Scotia down on the waterfront. His name was John Lindsay, and not to say his name, I guess, but he wouldn't mind. And I had received an award when I was playing football in his name that we found out 20 years later, we found out that I had received a football honor in his name. But what happened was that he was in one day and he was like multi-zillionaire. And I had no idea as a new dentist coming in. I look in his mouth and he's missing 2 lower molars. And I said to him, I said, "John," I said, we could start these and we could do one side this year and then wait a couple of years and you could save up and do the other side." And I had no idea. And he goes, "I'll do them both right now." And so I went back in to talk to Dr. Dexter. He said, "How did you get him to do these bridges?" I said, "Why?" And he goes, "Because I've been trying for probably 10, 15 years. And I don't know how you got him to do it." And I told him, he laughed. He thought that was so funny because I didn't have any idea that, the guy, had $50 million probably. And he built buildings with his own money. But he was very successful. But the long story is, I assumed that he couldn't afford it again, but it was in the opposite way. He just said, "Oh no, I'll show you that I have the money." And he ended up doing all his work, which lasted him right until the day he died. And so it worked really well for him, which I felt proud of.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What were some of the biggest lessons you learned from the Dexters? Other than that, that's a brilliant lesson. But like being a young dentist, going into a successful practice, it's not like an easy ride. You got to kind of earn your stripes, right?
Yeah, no, the Dexters, we used to stay after work every night. And Carl Dexter, who was Earl's brother, because Earl had ill health earlier. And my wife used to always say, where were you after work? And I say, I was talking to Dr. Carl. And she says, I'm getting you a shirt that says I'm talking to Dr. Carl. So he was my real mentor, right? And I should have got a shirt. And his license plate was AAWCED, which was, they said, always at work. C is Carl Dexter, Carl Dexter. So his wife used to make a joke that he loved it so much that they were always down there. And so I learned about his love of being involved, because he was involved with the Dental Association. He got me involved with that early. He was involved with the church. He had me at his church when I wasn't a member of that church, calling people for donations. He had me involved with the Kiwanis. He had me involved with the, you know, different Halifax Board of Trade. He said, we need to have one of our team members there. Get involved. He's like, get involved or else you're not going to be part of what's going on. And as you give, you'll start to get more back. And so that was his message. And I really played out, because we had a young girl, and I just found her pictures recently. And I put them on my Instagram and I wrote a little note about it, because I was cleaning up during COVID. And it's funny, because one of the comedians around here says, if you haven't cleaned up your basement by now, you're never going to clean up, because, you know, you had time. And I was cleaning up my basement and getting in there, and I found these old pictures of this girl, and they used to call her Becky Beaver. And Carl Dexter, at that time, he was probably in his early 80s, used to take his car, go pick her up at school. He didn't really know her other than he knew her through Kiwanis. Pick her up, drive her down to my office, and I was doing orthodontics on her. And then all they had to do was pay $100 for the case. And so at the time Kiwanis was going to pay half and I was going to pay half. And so what happened was that we get the case all done, and, you know, he would go and pick her up, drive her, bring her back. And I was just dumbfounded. I've done this a number of times myself for other patients, not pick them up, but look after them. Anyway, this young girl gets finished and she's not called Becky Beaver anymore. And she writes this letter that would make you cry if you read the letter, at how this changed her life. And I realized that those are the most meaningful cases to me as a dentist now. And it's not always about, I did a case last year for Seattle Study Club, full mouth reconstruction for my old football coach. And he had given to me, it's time to give back. Time to give, like, he gave me countless hours of time. And now it's time for me to give back to him as he ages. And he's, he's enjoyed a full mouth reconstruction with like 7 implants and all kinds of crowns. But I was able to take that and then show the case at the Seattle Study Club, how I worked the case out digitally and made it all work. And it was a really good challenge for me too. And we just did a bone graft on him just recently with the screw technology that I learned when I was teaching in Seattle Study Club. One day, one of the oral surgeons was showing me how to do a case. And so it's really interesting how it all comes back. When you're giving, it comes back. And so that's the biggest thing, is don't be a taker. Just try to be a giver. Yeah. And then when you get the most meaningful things back, and the most laughs in life are from, like, the Dexters telling me different things. And I would get with Dr. Carl Dexter and I would have a debate with him. We'd be debating about something. And then he would take such a stance, and all of a sudden I'd listen and he'd be in the other room. He'd be debating with someone else and he'd be using all my arguments that he just, and he'd be telling the other person, no, you need to do it this way. And he was so, like, such a great person. He would have people come and stay at his home that would be there for years, that he would try to help people. And but so, he certainly, I didn't have a choice. I had to be involved or else you're in trouble, kind of thing. Yeah. But I liked it.
Yeah, this profession is so cool, filled with very noble people, and you never know the impact you'll have on others. We always say all the time, there's two types of dentists, people that change lives and people that fix teeth. Now, either one of them is bad. You just got to pick which side of the fence is on. Scott, how important is mindset early on in your career as a dentist? Like, Carl, great influence.
Yeah, he was a great influence. And as you age through dentistry, you're going to find there's times in your life that you're going to be super busy. And your mindset has to be set that the mindset I had when I was a football player, when I was dead tired and really run down or whatever, was you can keep going and you can also, you can do it and you can be the best that you can be. That's all you can do is be the best that you can be. You can't be better than someone else. You need to be the best that your hands will do. And so those mindsets can run you into some snags, you know, as your life, as you age and you get into some anxiety filled areas in your life. And I know when I was 40, that happened to me. And it seems to happen to people when you're at those transitions of 9 to 10, like 49, 59, 69. And that's when people do their aesthetic dentistry a lot of times too. I don't know if people notice that, but it happens. But I remember when I was 40, I was got up in the middle of the night. I thought I was having a heart attack. I couldn't believe it. I was like, boom, boom, boom. My heart was pounding through my chest. And I got up and instead of going to the doctor, I went for a walk. And what was really happened to me at the time was I was having a panic attack and I didn't even know what that was, you know? And so I was walking around the streets of Halifax and not really realizing what was going on. And so for the next 2 weeks, it was a wild ride of like anxiety. And I learned about anxiety. And if there's younger dentists watching, you need to learn about anxiety early. Your mindset needs to be, how do you protect yourself against that? Making sure you exercise, making sure you balance your life out. And that's extremely important for dentists more than anybody, because we live in an environment that is very stressful. We see people under stress and we have to treat them. And so you need to kind of have a mindset that you are protecting yourself. So this morning I'm on my bike, I have a Peloton and I'm, you know, doing my part. Tonight I'll go back and do some more Peloton because I want to get thinner, you know, but the thinner is not as much important as your brain, making sure your adrenal glands are not getting too big and that your adrenaline is not driving you into stinking thinking, as I call it. And the stinking thinking can take you down. And it took me down. And once I learned what it was, then you can control it and you can actually do well with it. And, you know, like I've been in front of a 2,000 person audience and, you know, you're a little bit nervous when you do that, but then you just learn how to deal with the adrenaline and it makes you so that you start to feel normal.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you are looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
So it's funny you say 40, that when you say 40, those are transitional and 49, like I never even thought of that. Because I had chest pain at the same time at 40. Now, I don't know if it was anxiety driven. I do know that anxiety is real. Like it's very real. Where did yours come from? So you're 40, you have the anxiety. Was it the practice? Was it like, what was it that made you feel that way? And how did you get through it?
Well, I think the combination of what I did was at the time, you really don't know what you're dealing with. And so because no one really talks about it. Okay, so no one talks about even the link between anxiety and depression. And I've never got to be depressed that I know about. Maybe someone say that I did. But anxiety, certainly on this continuum as you move across, you got to be careful not to get depressed. And so as a dentist, what's happening every day is you're getting adrenaline and adrenaline and adrenaline. And so as the adrenal glands grow and you start to become a little bit dependent upon it and you like it because you're an adrenaline junkie, then what happens is that people start to thrive on that and you go faster in your dental life. You're going pedaling faster and you're going, you know, so much more. And that's the time you got to be careful of gambling or drinking or marital affairs or a whole bunch of different things. It's when you got to get back your balance. And so when you get out of balance, which you know, people will get out of balance in their lifetime, that's just normal. Then you just have to realize, okay, what am I going to do when that happens? And that's what I do is what's called Red CIA 40.
What is that?
And I have this on my, it's called Red CIA 40 was something someone told me at age 40. And it means relaxation, exercise, diet, and then CIA, and that's 40 minutes each. And CIA is catharsis, intelligence, and attitude. And I have a good video about what I'm talking about on my YouTube channel. And so if you went in and typed in Scott McLean, and you went into, you'll see a graph on it. It talks about anxiety from COVID. And if you write it in Scott McLean COVID in YouTube, you'll find it. But it just talks about what I do. Someone showed me this many years ago. And that's what I use. That's what I do. So that's when I'm feeling like things are not in balance. And you have to become aware of it. That's the number one thing, is you need to become aware that these things happen to you. You start to get a little bit grumpier. You start to get a little bit more negative, and you don't want to watch the news, and you want to, you know, gurgly stomachs or backs or neck. You start to have all these things that start to happen to you. And as a dentist, you need to realize that we are in a profession that is known to have a lot of anxiety, and you don't want it to develop into a depression. So you want to be, you know, preventing that. So I can remember, for instance, when I was going through my thing at age 40, I had a lady in my chair who I needed to extract a tooth, central. It was her, and her, we call it the 2-1, okay, so in the Canada. So number nine in the States. So I'm about to extract it. I'm injecting the lady, and she's freaking out. And meanwhile, my adrenaline's right off the chart. Like, I had gone to PEI, which is another province, on the weekend with my wife to visit a grandmother, get to the house and say, I have to go home now, because you want to be at home. You don't want to be anywhere but home. And so we drove 6 hours and got back in the car and drove 6 hours back to my home. Then the next day, next Monday, I'm back with this lady. So I inject her, and she's freaking out, going nuts, just going nuts. And I'm like, my adrenaline is raising to the level where I'm feeling, okay, I can't handle this. And so anyway, I inject her, and then I went for a walk for about a half an hour. I left my office, and she was in the chair, and I went for a walk up around the neighborhood, and then came back and then took the tooth out. So I had the sense of I needed to talk to someone and learn what to do. That's what the Red CIA does for me.
Yeah,
is it teaches me how to be in balance when I'm getting out of balance.
Yeah, and it's so interesting when you talk about those spaces in your life. There's a lot of research that the lowest level of happiness in most marriages is between 11 and 20 years for a lot of different reasons. Your career, kids, you don't have the time. Compound that anxiety with that. You know, I've been there where you're like, oh my gosh, there's got to be something. You know, so it is very important to get some help to like have some clarity, anything.
It's like if you had a root canal, you go to see a root canal specialist or dentist to do the root canal. When your brain is out of kilts, you need to have someone to straighten your thoughts back out and say, okay, don't expect to do all the things you're doing now and have this go away.
Yeah,
because it's not going to go away. You need to change what you're doing. And, you know, they always said, what was it? How many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? One, but the light bulb needs to be, want to be changed, right? And so, yeah. But that's the same with you. Like, you need to want to be changed because you don't want to experience those awkward feelings. And so that's something I learned very young, because I remember the person who told me about Red CIA 40, because you're young to be here. You're early. Said, well, I'm a dentist, you know, that's part of the reason. But dentists need to realize that there are a risk of that and then protect themselves.
Right.
And so I follow those rules that I'm talking about. And I talk to my patients about that all the time. And there's no more valuable advice than I can give them than that advice. I draw my diagram out and I show them how I think. And people have got up and hugged me or said, that's the best that anyone's ever told me about this, you know, how, you know, why am I to balance? And so it's really important to participate that way.
Yeah, I love that. So if you're listening, you'll see, we're going to post a link to Scott's video and the Red CIA 40. So that's powerful. I talk to young dentists, as you do, all time. And sometimes they're like, you don't know how hard this is. I don't know. You know, and I'm like, you're going to be fine. Talk about a time that was really tough for you as a dentist, building a practice, or, and what you did, like, how'd you get out of it? What were some of the things you did, and how did you?
The things that bothered me the most are when you're ruminating. And so people have to understand what ruminating is, because many of us right now do this. And so when you're laying in bed and your mind is going through things and you're just going through them and you can't get off of it because you're ruminating, it's because your body does this to work out the problems. And, you know, when you go to sleep, the next day, the problem is not going to be as significant. The next day after that, it's not going to be as significant. So it starts to work through the problem. But most of the problems that I have had have been when I'm trying to treat someone at the highest capability that I can, and the treatment doesn't go right.
Right.
And so you're trying to, then you're dealing with someone who's not really happy with what you did. And so many times this is because of their own anxiety or depression they're having, and you can never make them happy. And I've always been someone who always wants to make everyone happy to a fault. And so I have to be realizing that sometimes someone's not going to like me just because of the way I look or because I'm Canadian or whatever. But, you know, I want everyone to like me, and that's just not going to be the way it is. And so, you know, if I have, you know, people, like I had to get voted into this organization, and there was 101 people, 100 said yes, one said no. And what do I focus on? I focus on, why did that person say no? And we do that more now because of all this Instagram. And you're saying the new addiction is the likes, the like buttons. So I think anything that I've looked at that has caused me strife in dentistry has been because of my expectation of what I should have. And then you ruminate about it. And once you ruminate about it, you need to know what to do when that happens.
Yeah.
I like to focus
on that too. I call it the hamster wheel. It doesn't stop. You know what I mean?
Like, it doesn't stop.
Yeah. So,
and I can remember different times when that has happened to me, and it happens on a mini level all the time to people.
Yeah.
But when something is significant, then it happens even more so. And
right.
The good thing is you start to forget about it, and I can't remember a lot of the bad things. But the one of the good things that's in my video that I was talking about, I took something from TED Talks and made it for dentistry, was, when are you the happiest? And when you're the happiest at dentistry is when your skill is at the highest level and your problems at the highest level.
Yes.
When you come up to here, you're in the happy zone because you have the highest skill that you can be prepared, and you also have the highest problem happening, and you're able to complete it and have someone be, yeah, that's awesome. And so that's when you're the happiest at dentistry. And when you're the least happy is when you're down on the other end, when you're doing something that's very boring, and you don't have the skill.
Yeah.
And that's when we get rumination happening.
Yeah. And I you actually did that on the COVID. You talked about that. I don't know if you call it a matrix or whatever, but you're actually using more of your mind than you are your hands in that whole thing and solving those. And it gives you a lot of joy and satisfaction. So I have so many questions I want to ask you, because I, you know, I always enjoy you as a person. So you're how old today? How old are you right now?
58.
Okay, so 58. If I were to ask you the question, what do you know for sure at this point in your career as a dentist? I'm a young dentist. I'm watching. Scott, what have you learned for sure in all these years of building a practice? I mean, is there anything that comes to mind?
I know one thing you need, excuse me, you need to use the patient's name about 4 or 5 times minimum when you're seeing them. You need to make them feel like you're their best friend. I know one of my dental assistants, she said she used to wait on tables, and when she went out, they would say they wanted us to feel like the person that they're serving is their best friend. And, you know, you can try these things, but it makes you have more fun at work. But the first thing I do when I come in to see a patient, I know for sure that they have the most favorite word in their vocabulary is their name. And so if I say, Kirk, how you doing, Kirk? And then bring it up, like I strategically, and I don't mean to be mean, but I won't go look at the chart like this and then come over and say, hey, Kirk, how you doing? Because they know what you just did. let you download the name. And many times you know the name anyway, because you start to remember because of the association talking you had the last time, which was very genuine. Genuine is usually the best. And so people need to know that I'm there for them. I know that, not there for myself. And so they will want to do what they want to do, but I need to be able to guide them to what I think is going to be the best for them, and then offer them alternatives that aren't as good, but they're still alternatives, and there's not just one way to do it, because sometimes they need to take a different way for a while. Yeah. They need to make it so that, you know, to use the analogy, you build a house and you make a space later for a swimming pool, or you make a space later for a garage, but you don't have the money right now. But many times people come back and say, okay, I'm ready to do what you said. So right. I know people, they like you to be genuine. They like you to be authentic, and they like to think that they're on your team, that you come down at any time of the night. Cause I will, I've been down here, you know, throw my dental outfit on, come down and help people get out of pain. Because once you know that you've had a painful tooth, then you know what it's like, then you know that you're going to come down and help someone, because that's how it works. Also, if you get something when you're younger or anytime, you need to also give back. Yeah. And that's a rule that I use. I know that is really important. People have given me gifts at Christmas, not that I needed chocolate, but I'm going to take the time to write a thank you note.
Yeah.
Who does that? Not a thank you email, a thank you note.
Yep.
Handwritten, even though they can't read my handwriting, but something that they can look at and say, oh yeah, it's from Scott. But then they refer to you. Yep. I know that birds of a feather flock together too. I learned that on Maxwell Smart when I was a young boy, because successful patients will send you more successful patients. And if you're happy and they're happy with what you're doing, and you're taking the time to talk to them, then they will send you more patients.
Yeah.
So if you're not taking the time to pull the weeds, your garden's going to be full of weeds.
Right. Now you're in the prime of your career. You know, you're a key opinion leader, not only in the CE circuit, but in the implant world. Recently, you were inducted into the GNYAP, which is an exclusive group. I mean, there's only 108 people, and you're a Canadian. There's very few Canadians that get it. Like, it's a huge honor to be in that group. I mean, you're talking about Tarnow, you're talking about Chew, you're talking about some of the best in the world. I mean, I'm a young dentist watcher. How did you get here, Scott? Like, how do you create a great career like that? Anything you would like, throw me a breadcrumb. Like, if I'm a young dentist, like, how do you do that?
My breadcrumb is document. So people say, what do you mean by that? Well, today, for instance, I did a case and I'm doing a presentation later this month. And I try to get as good at photography as I possibly can be. And again, I have it on my Instagram. You just have to go in and look and say, okay, what are the settings on the camera? They're all there. But once you set the settings, you need to get good at taking photography with SLR cameras. Also good at taking your iPhone out and doing videos. Good at doing iMovie. If you see what I put an iMovie up of me cooking sous vide steak on Christmas Eve. I had it up that evening, even though I didn't spend a lot of time doing it. I can do it very quickly and make a message that goes out that usually it's about dentistry, but I didn't do it that night. But the message is that this person is doing this type of treatment. So what I would also do is continue to learn and continue to keep on who's the popular flavor right now of what's going on. But definitely document your work, to stop and take some photos and train your team to take photos, not just photos for doing Invisalign. I'm talking about sequence photos of how something works, because then you'll look at it and you'll go, okay, that didn't work, or that did work. And then you kind of put it together and you'll realize that people want to see, they want to learn, they want to understand things. And so most of the video now, I've taken much of my video with Canon cameras and stuff like that. I'm back down to an iPhone with a holder like this and moving it around. And we did some video today. And sometimes I'm over my time, you know, that I have time allocated to do the implant or to do But I see an opportunity for something that is a learning spot. I say, I'm stopping everything and I'm going to do this. It's just like you stop everything to do a patient that has a problem. You know, you try to organize your time, but I don't know. I haven't been able to organize my time and at work. It seems like something that's difficult, but.
You and I. Go ahead.
Oh, you go ahead.
No, you go. Okay. You and I are definitely going to have to do another one of these because I have like an hour more of things I want to learn from you. But, you know, you and I do this a lot. We learn a lot. It's, you know, a lot of it's really serious and important. One of my favorite, this is kind of like the cherry on top as far as interview. I always want to know from every dentist that I get to know, what's the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you? Like, you're like, I can't even believe this with a patient. Now, you don't have to use names. We're not going to do any HIPAA violations. But some of these, I have laughed for 3 days. I'm like, that did not happen. They're like, I'm not kidding. That happened to me. I was like, and I didn't know what to do. Is anything like that come to mind? What's the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you in an opportunity?
No, this happened in my first year of practice. And so I was, my dental assistant was French. And so she's bilingual. And so often there's bilingual in Nova Scotia. So we have children coming in. What I would do is go, how you doing? And I didn't want to go right to the mouth and get them all spooked. So what I would do is say, let's count your fingers and your toes and count your elbows. And then I go to, let's count your ears. And I go 1, 2, 3. And then the child would go, that's not my ear. And so then I'd go, let's count your teeth. And they just open up and I'd count the teeth. And it works beautifully. So one day this young guy comes in and he looked like he was such a tiny little guy and his mother sat at the very end of his feet. So my dental assistant's next to me and I'm sitting there. And so he's French. He does not speak any English. So I started with, okay, let's count les doigts. And so un, deux, doigts, and going through count the fingers. And then I said, okay, let's count le genou. And so in the knees. And so I went to, I wanted to say, his ears, and so the ears is yore, I think it is. Instead, I said wazo, which means your bird, right? So you don't want to say, the mother looked at me like, and my dental assistant almost fell off her chair because I made this big mistake. Okay, we're going to count your bird, one, you know, like, and at the time, I realized what I had said, and I just was laughing. And then I realized she could probably report me to the dental board or something like that.
Right.
It was a pure mistake, and it was just one of those things that once I realized what I said, I laughed for, you know, a couple of weeks about it because it was just so funny.
Oh yeah,
but it was certainly very innocent, but we have a lot of fun at work. We have a wonderful team. You know, we've lost some team over COVID, but the team that we have, they really care about each other. And so we still have, you know, different fun things that happen. And, for the most part, we have to be a little bit stricter with the rules now, you know, in terms of, we don't tell a lot of jokes or anything like that. And so that's just not what we do because it's not, you don't want to make someone feel uncomfortable, but I don't know. I think that was the funniest one that I had, and it was just innocent. And my dental assistant, I thought she was going to lose it because I didn't realize what I had done, you know, so.
Oh my gosh. They ever write a book about us, like our team members will have so much to share that it'll be dangerous. It's all good stuff. Well, buddy, I really appreciate this. Give us a couple of final good words as we close out here. I'm going to encourage you to check out, you know, Scott's Instagram page as well as his YouTube page. There are a bunch of other things too. If you have a study club and you need a great speaker, Scott is phenomenal. You will not be disappointed. But give us a couple words as we close this out.
These are words for younger dentists, and I'll give some to older dentists too. But the words for younger dentists are: make sure that you're taking time to learn and to understand what's going on, also make sense, you know, make sure you're looking after your future, because as a younger man, make sure you're insured. So a woman, younger man or woman, and make sure you have insurance early. That's really important to establish your insurance, because you start to get into health problems and you're not properly insured. You need to make sure that's followed. Make sure you're invested. So buying stocks or buying bonds, learning about how that all works. We need more of that. We need more of that when you're early, because you need to take about 10% at minimum put it away, and this forget about it. Learn to live on the 90% instead of overspending when you're younger. So that's really important. When you're, you know, as you're getting older, like you have to be making sure you stay healthy. I read this book, I can't remember what it was called, but they basically were saying that you want to live really fun and then drop dead, you know, but you want to live long and then drop dead, not have this big, long, ailing life. And certainly not in, you know, in your mental capacity as well. So make sure you learn about sleep apnea. Make sure you learn how that affects you and your patients. It's a big one. And I also think that I heard something on TV the other night, which the person said, you know, dementia or just old age, right? And they said, if you have old age, it's when you lose your keys all the time. And so you're losing your keys, your phone, that's old age. If you lose it and you find it, you don't know what to do with it, that is dementia. And I said, that is perfect because, you know, as someone who's getting older, I'm starting to lose my stuff more. My iPhone, I have my watch so I can find my iPhone and stuff like that, but I still know what the iPhone's for. And last I would say is learn about technology. Technology is your friend, and it certainly has made it so that we can get implants in the exact spot we want. It's made it so that we can make digital smile designs and do all the things that make it so that you're a better person, a better dentist. So you raise on that level of competency, which allows you to do more advanced cases. And so then when you tie into someone that can mentor you, it's a matter of you also giving back to the person that's mentoring you. They're going to get something from you too. And it's always working that way. So I think I would say that is the, you know, that for older age dentists, he or she should give back in a mentoring way and replace yourself with someone better than yourself.
Well, Carl Dexter did that. And I have no doubt you'll do the same, buddy. So awesome. As always, I appreciate you, our friendship, just everything you do. And there's no question we're going to have to do another one because I have so many other questions I want to ask. Buddy, thanks.
Thank you. You're an awesome person. Great leader for our community of dentists. And my hat goes off to you. What you're doing here, I think, is very special. And you're opening up some conversations that people don't always share. Mm-hmm. And you have a way about you to get that to come out, which is good. So my hat goes off to you. And it was so nice to meet you and your team this summer and to spend some real quality time with you in our darkest times of COVID, which meant like I felt like I was going to work every day. So it was great. So I thank you again for that.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I needed you and everybody else in the education as much as you did, if not more than all of you, because I was panicking myself. So we'll continue to do that. This is an awesome profession and is some of my favorite stuff. So, buddy, I know you have to run. I have to run also. So we'll do this again and stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for watching the Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, do us a favor, just hit the share button, share with your friends. Check out Scott's social media, all that stuff. You'll absolutely love it. Send us suggestions you want to see from other guests or Scott, and I'll line it all up. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.